Hey, JB here. The wolf is in, not my house, not actually in the wolf's den. I'm actually in a beautiful hotel suite, the penthouse of the W Hotel, where I've been for the last few days at Art Miami, Art Basel, right, which is in Miami, and had a tremendous success here on a collaboration with David Yarrow. We recreated a scene from The Wolf of Wall Street. In fact, I'll have him insert a little photo right here. As you can see, this was actually in the newspaper. It sold for $200,000 for one picture with myself and a couple of Victoria's Secret models and a whole bunch of other people there and all sorts of different, you know, poses as we recreated a scene from the movie with a live wolf, an actual wolf that David Yarrow, who's one of the foremost wildlife photographers in the world, brought in. Pretty cool. Anyway, sold for $200,000 because it was also signed by Leo DiCaprio and Marty Scorsese, and all that money went to charity, which was pretty awesome, right? Very rewarding experience to collaborate with David. In fact, I'm going to put up an article here also in the New York Post. And of course, they bash me. And this, you know, it'll be, I'm like the same Jordan Belfort. If I rescued like five children from a burning boat in the middle of the ocean, I mean, and he's the same Jordan Belfort that 39 years ago lost investors. Fucking joke. Leave it to the New York Post, right? Anyway, so I've been away on tour for about 2 weeks, right? And originally, I was going to have someone down here in Miami do a podcast with me, right? Because I wanted to get one in. But, you know, the sound quality here, we kind of got screwed up with the microphones and stuff. So we're doing this little bit of a makeshift thing. So we figured that it would be really fun, since it's the end of the year, that we put together a sort of best of the best from all the podcasts that I've done. So rather than trying to force a square peg in a round hole with a guest that's really not, you know, in the wolf's den, so to speak, without the right equipment here, we figured it was much better if we just went back and really give you guys some of the greatest clips that came out of this first, like, kind of third of a season of doing, I think we were doing almost 4 months now, right? And we've had amazing results. So I want to thank all of you, my loyal listeners and followers. I try to make it funny and interesting and great. You know, next year I'm going to start having, I think, one episode each week will just be me talking, you know, doing a kind of story time or the wolf's rant, which everyone, you know, kind of switching off and on with different stuff, and then one guest each week. But this was a great year. So let's go right now to the archives, and my team really pulled out the best of the best moments. Of course, you know that, you know, it within there will have to be, you know, Grant Cardone and all its idiocy, where, you know, he throws off his typical stupid statements that, you know, in the past were never challenged, and now everyone knows what a charlatan the guy is. Fraud / charlatan, right? And there you go. All right. So I'm sure that will make it in the best of the best. I didn't pick them, but I know I have faith in my team that they will pick the right things here. So we got some great stuff, some funny puff stuff, some controversial stuff. But all in all, it's going to be a great episode. So buckle in and take care.
The only time that I ever sold anything successfully was a bunch of fish that we had caught, redfish, red snappers. I caught hundreds and hundreds of them. One day we dropped lines over the boat in about 120 foot of water, and we would drop lines and it would have 120 foot line, not a fishing pole, a line.
Right.
A rope, dude, with like 80 hooks on it. And you just wait. You sit and wait, right. Do nothing. And then you go over there and you pull up 60 fish. Every line had 60 fish.
Really?
So like,
where was this though?
This is south of New Orleans.
Okay.
So we catch, I don't know, 300-400 fish. We couldn't even keep them all.
Right.
Snapper about this big. So I tell the guys, I'm like, hey guys, can I have your fish? I mean, we can't eat it all. So we put it on ice. And on the way home, when we came in like 8 days later, I stopped door to door. This is how I got started my career. Door to door, I was selling fish.
To homes? To restaurants.
To businesses.
God, okay.
To State Farm agents. Hey guys, I got some fish. Oh, it's fresh as shit right here.
You
right?
know, I did the same job, by the way, but with boxes of frozen steak and meat. And
well, Well, I didn't have enough ice. I didn't plan or I didn't know what I was doing. So the fish was going bad.
Got it.
And I'm like, I have to sell this shit.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to go
so
bad.
So what was your rap? What was your pitch back then?
Hey guys, I got fish. I got fish. That was my fucking stick.
I'll give you really good prices. They're about
my straight line.
I don't tell them now they're going to go bad.
I got fish. I just caught them. You want them? And that's how I still sell today, by the way.
Okay.
Like there's no, you know, it's very direct, to the point. Find out if you're interested and then I move on.
So if someone's not interested, you have buyers and non-buyers, right? Like what do you mean?
No, I don't believe that. I think they're all buyers.
You think everyone's a buyer?
Every person, every human being you meet is going to buy something.
Whether
they might not buy my fish, but then they're going to buy insurance or they're going to buy groceries. Or they're all buyers.
But what you're selling fish, though.
In that case, I was selling fish, but that does not make them a non-buyer.
Of fish, though. If
they that day, that well, moment. Right, that
no, if they don't, if they don't, my point is technically.
Every buyer's a buyer.
Okay, so
all I'm looking for is money anyway. Every seller's looking for something. They're looking for money. They don't want to keep what they have. They're looking for money.
So you don't think, okay, so.
I think every buyer's a buyer.
Slow it down for 1 second, all right? Slow it down for a second. You speak almost as fast as me.
You're on the Red Bull. I'm not.
Question, okay? Yeah, so if you're a salesman, a young salesman out in the field, let's say you're selling insurance, right?
Yeah.
And let's say you knock on someone's door and say, I'm not interested in insurance.
I understand.
Would you keep pushing and pushing and pushing?
No, I totally understand. But I don't believe that they're not interested is an interest level.
Okay.
Not interested is better than before you hit that door and they said they weren't interested. No interest is a level of interest.
Okay.
Like if I have no coffee in my house, I'm talking about coffee.
Okay.
Zero, none is a quantity.
Right. So for the salesperson themselves, though, how do you manage that situation? Do you keep trying to push or you go on to the next door?
Well, you definitely want to go in. You definitely need a funnel. You definitely need, the ultimate solution to all sales is to have a lot of people to talk to.
Okay.
It's not some trick.
Let's say you're going door to door. A lot of people do that, right? So whether it's door to door or out on the phone, right? You knock on someone's door, right? Do you believe that you should try to knock on as many doors as possible, try to really go deeper into people who aren't interested? Or what's the sweet spot?
No, they should.
You know what I'm saying? It's not your question. What's the sweet spot? How do you know when it's better to not waste your time?
There is no sweet spot.
Okay.
Right? Like, because even if they hit the sweet spot, it's about volume. I mean, there's no success without volume.
Okay.
So anybody that's trying to like come up with the thing is trying to get away from the work.
Right.
And so there's no trick in this game. Like if a person wants to be really successful in sales, real estate, acting, you need a lot of hits.
Right.
Right. So like I think everybody's looking for that one thing that gets that in the door and gets that one sale as opposed to, dude, how do I keep calling on the whole neighborhood?
Right.
How do I keep working that neighborhood and then the next neighborhood? And then how do I come back? Because one thing the cold call people do that incorrectly is they canvas cold a neighborhood and they never go back to that neighborhood. But watch, I do. I go back in. So I'm basically following you up.
Okay.
Okay. It's somebody once said, hey, somebody else blows up the tire. They blow up the tires and I ride the bike. You know, they get them ready.
Okay.
So that neighbor, that person, that phone call, that door is going to be knocked on again by someone.
Okay.
Now most people are just not going to go back and hit on it. But
what about time management issue? What's the time management in terms of new doors versus old doors?
I don't know. The gold is in the follow-up.
Okay. So in other words, you don't have a distinction. Because it's a good question, don't you think? Though, like, when do you
not
know?
Really. I think it's a bad question.
You think it's a bad question?
I think it's not the right question.
To know when to not follow.
I think the young salesperson should be taught, hey, look, there's no trick, dude. There's no freaking sweet spot of this game. The sweet spot, if there is a sweet spot, it is about creating tremendous volumes of activity, having lots of people to talk to.
So hitting lots and lots of doors.
Or taking lots of phone calls.
Well, hitting doors or whether it's cold the phone or doors,
the
right?
Sweet spot,
numbers game, you think?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
But if they know me, rather than me knowing them, if they already know me, then my leverage goes up probably 10x.
Okay. Could you explain that?
Hey, oh, I know you. I saw you in the paper. I saw you on, you get that because people, know about the movie, right? So you immediately have some altitude or lift.
Right.
Because people know you. It's not who I know. It's who knows me.
Right. So for the young salesperson just getting started.
Or old. There's some old salespeople out there. You got any old people watching your show?
I got a few, Okay. I tell you what, though. I actually skew kind of on the young side, but I have all ages, of course, right? Would you say you're a better salesman or marketer?
I'd say I'm a better businessman.
Better business. Which of the two, sales to marketing? What do you think about those two?
I'm a better businessman.
Better businessman. Entrepreneur.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about, no. I'm thinking about being a businessman. There's a lot of entrepreneurs out there.
Explain that
to me. Okay, so an entrepreneur, by definition, is not what most people are doing right now. Like they're just calling themselves entrepreneurs. They hadn't even looked up the definition. I'm just going to look it up just so I don't.
Of entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? He ever looked it up?
I kind of know intuitively
what
it means.
What do you think it means?
Someone who starts businesses and, you know.
Person who organizes and operates a business or businesses. Taking on, listen, but this is the important part. This is good for your young viewer. Taking on greater than normal financial risk in order to do so. By definition, the second half of that, most people are not entrepreneurs because they never take on any risk.
Mm.
Like they're holding on to their money. They got cash in the banks. They got equity in their houses. They're saving money, saving for retirement. If you're doing any of that shit.
Versus putting the balls against the fucking wall,
you're
right?
You're a bitch. You're like, what are you doing, dude? You're more committed. People are more committed to the equity in their home than they are to the equity of their brand or business.
Yeah, how old are you now? You're fucking older than me.
61.
You're older than me. I like that.
We should do a cage match, me and you.
Fighting or
three rounds, 90 days to prepare for it. Who the fuck wins this thing? Who comes out? Huh? Give all the money to charity. $100 a pay per view. It'd be fucking good.
A physical cage match.
Physical. Right?
Really?
Yeah. Give 90 days to train. We both get ready.
I need a little bit longer. You know why? I just had my shoulder. Replaced.
Even better.
No,
even
no, no,
better.
No. I had a metal. I have a metal ball on my shoulder now, so I don't even.
I won't.
You promise you won't touch my shoulder?
I won't hit your shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, we need about a year.
Who would sign up for that deal? $100, pay-per-view. How many people, how much money could we do?
What?
Let's see what we could do. You think you could, we could both promote it.
We could both, a cage match. Do you
100,000.
You sound like Logan Paul now, buddy. I had Logan Paul on my podcast.
Would Logan do it with me?
Logan would kick your ass, I think. Logan's a big, he's a fucking tough dude, Logan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm a little past my prime. I wrestled in college, buddy, but it's been quite some time since I slugged it out.
That's why I give you 90 days to get ready.
Yeah, 90 days. No, I would need about, okay. No, seriously, I would need about a year for this to heal.
Let's do it. Let's set a date. I want to set a date.
Yeah. But anyway, listen.
How old are you?
I just turned 57.
Yeah, so that we could call it the
geriatric slugfest?
The elderly cage match. sales titans. The sales titans cage match.
You didn't want to get in the cage with me, pal.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Would you guys buy a ticket? That's all I want.
But don't guess about.
Let's go. See, and you think I'm not interested in sales? What am I doing right now? Let's sell it.
Dude, you're like Don King.
Huh? Let's do it.
I wanted to play a game with you.
Sure.
Okay, because you're a wolf and I'm a shark, right? So I want to play, what were we calling it? Was it just two truths and a lie, but this is going to be two wolves and a shark. All right.
What's the game?
I want to test my skills against one of the greatest. I'm going to tell you three stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to tell me which one's truth, which two are true and which one am I lying about?
Okay.
Okay, you ready? All right, first one. When I lived in the castle, my brother and I lost everything. We're in this like 7,000 square foot house. The mortgage business crashed. We had no money left. We're going literally month to month, seeing how we can find the money in order to make a mortgage payment to survive till we sell it.
Right.
At one point, we got so desperate, we put our house all over these different websites to rent out our house. And we got a call from a porno company. And they said, we'd like to rent your house out for a porno. We pay, you know, $8,000 for the day, but we use your house in a porno. And I said, oh man, I don't know. We're not in the porno, but you know, they would shoot there. And I looked at my brother. I was like, we don't have a choice. So there was a porno shot in the castle that we lived in and owned.
Okay.
And that's number one. Number two, I'm out there and I see a property that I love. I lock it up and I buy it for $2.6 million. I close on the house, which I had enough financing for, but I needed financing in order to redo the house to flip it. My financing fell out. I'm now stuck with a house that I just bought for $2.6 million.
Okay.
Financing's out. I'm freaking out. I can't get a loan. So what do? I go to Home Depot. I buy $10,000 worth of paint. I put on my old football jersey and I paint the house a different color. I end up selling it 30 days later for $3.6 million, $1 million profit in 30 days. Okay. I'm in the delivery room. My wife is having Lexi, my daughter, 2.5 years ago. I'm sitting there and my phone rings on a deal that I've been trying to work for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm negotiating the deal while my wife is in labor with Lexi.
Right.
My goal, because my dad's a gynecologist, was always to be able to deliver my own baby. I'm delivering my...
Is this part of the same... Which is this?
No, this is the third story.
Oh, it's the third story.
The third story.
Okay.
You got the porno story, you got the...
the flip story.
You got the flip story, and then you got this. And so...
The third story sounds an awful like my life.
I'm there. I deliver my own daughter, Lexi, out of my wife, while on hold... For the deal that I end up closing after the delivery.
Okay.
Which one of those three is fake?
The third.
I was not on hold. I did deliver my wife's baby, but I was not on hold.
Of course not.
How'd you know?
Because I'm a lot like you. And my wife would divorce me. And I made some big mistakes. I think the biggest one of the big mistakes I made was I was out of bounds with my drugs and my second child was living. I fell asleep on my wife's stomach while the baby was coming out. I overdosed on Lutz and I fell asleep between her legs and they had to wake me up with smelling salts. But I didn't mean to do that. I wouldn't have consciously like said, let me do something like that. So I said, you know what? And that's a sacred moment when your child is born. It really is. Those are some of the greatest moments of my life, right? So that was it.
That was awesome.
Why, do most people get that?
I just made it up on the car.
Oh,
right
you
over.
Just made it.
Yeah, this is for you. I don't do this with everybody.
Really?
This is Jordan Belfort's podcast only.
I'm happy I tell you three stories. You tell me which one is true, right?
Your stories are going to be better. I know
that. No. I'll tell you three stories, right? Okay, ready? True story, right?
So I gotta choose which one's
which
not
Which one
right.
is right. Okay, right? First story. Now, I'm going to use stories from the movie. But let's see which one is real or which one's not real. I'll tell you a story, right? So when I first realized I was under investigation, right? The FBI agent was this guy named Agent Coleman, right? And I was advised not to reach out to this guy. But I figured, what the fuck? I have nothing to hide. You know, why not, right? What's the big deal? So I said, let me go out there and try to touch base. I offer him, say, hey, listen, I know what's going on all over Wall Street and kind of give him an edge, give him a roadmap that I'm not really the bad guy. So I did invite him, as like you saw in the movie, great scene. I invite him on my yacht.
Yeah.
All right. And we have this meeting and I don't really try to bribe him, but like I make a big show and that's that. And while he doesn't arrest me right then and there, it sort of set us up as sort of adversaries for a while. We ultimately became friends because he was on my podcast recently, but that one scene was, you know, where I came about this close to the line of trying to bribe an FBI agent. That's number one.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
That's first story. Second story is when I was actually in the yacht and it was, you know, taking it out, it was going to sink. The reason I took the yacht out in the movie, they say it's because I had to get back to Switzerland to sign some papers because my aunt, there's a whole song and dance. The truth was, is that I took a bad dose of Quaaludes. I didn't balance my drugs correctly. And I got into what's called the movement phase. In other words, like I had too much ups and downs in my system. And I said, I can't sit in one spot. If I sit in one spot, I will die. So when I got to the yacht and there was a storm in the, you know, like you couldn't make the cross. I said, Captain Mark, I said, if you stay in the harbor, I'll die. You have to take the yacht across to Sardinia. We're in Rome going to Sardinia. He goes, we'll make it. We'll break some plates. I said, just go. He says, all right, let's go. The storm kicked up into a freak gales 4-7, right? 54 waves, bam, the yacht sinks. And it was all because of this bad dose of Quaaludes.
Okay.
The move. That's the second story, right? Third story is I was in Florida going to a back. You have a bad back? I had a bad back. I went to this back rehab place, right? I was sober for like 7 days now, which is a fucking miracle back then, right? In the 90s for me, right? 7 days sober. My friend comes down. He's a world-class drug addict, right? He's stoned out of his mind on Ludes and coke, right? He ends up drowning in my pool. We're doing underwater laps. He's stoned. He gets to one side. He drowns. I go and I pull him up. I save him. I give him mouth to mouth. He vomits in my mouth, all right? And he's barely breathing. They go to the emergency room, we all go, it's like a disaster, right? He's like 40 years old, the kid's a very rich guy, he's actually the CEO of Periels, all right? We get to the emergency room, and he's in there, he's dying. The guy, they can't get him to actually breathe on his own, his pulse is weak, he's about to die. Another famous doctor named Dr. Barthgreen runs in, because he was a friend of mine, he gave a lot of money to his foundation in Florida. He goes, you come with me, grabs me, we go into the emergency room, and there's my friend dying. he's hooked up to monitors and this and that. And all the doctors are like, Dr. Green, what are you doing here? He's a famous doctor, right? A neurosurgeon, right? He looks at my friend and he's like, just dead, basically. And he grabs him by the shoulders. He looks in his eyes. He goes, Elliot, wake up. And I was, and Elliot opens up. He saves this. He just wakes up out of nowhere, right? All the doctors are like, oh my God, that was the most amazing. I'm like, that's the most amazing. And as I shook my head to the right, I saw a glint of a piece of metal. So I'm like, oh, look, what's that? It was a syringe. So I kind of eyed over and it was a syringe full of morphine. So everyone's looking at the patient. So I say, well, I grabbed the needle, right? I think I'll just take the morphine. I was sober for 7 days, right? Put it in my pocket. It's kind of, I feel my pocket getting warm. It's like burning a hole in my pocket. So I said, excuse me, I have to go over and tell everyone the good news. I go outside. All right. I say, guys, Elliot's going to live. I said, I got to go to the bathroom. I run to the bathroom. I pull down my shorts. I go to jab myself in the ass. I'm like, fuck. It was like a safety. There's no plunger. It was a cartridge with a needle, but no plunger. I'm devastated. All right. Idea. I run out to the gift shop. I buy a blow pop lollipop. Okay.
Oh my God.
Back into the bathroom, pull my pants down. I inject myself. Blow pop is the plunger. Boom. I hit a vein. I get like 5 milligrams of morphine all at once. I fall on the floor. My eyes are burning. My mouth is dry. And I'm loving it, right? So now I'm crawling on the floor of the bathroom. I'm like, all right, I have to go. All my friends are in the waiting room. I got to go there, right? So I now wash my face. I start walking down the hall, okay? I'm walking down the hallway, bouncing from this place. An old Jewish couple walks by me. I'm like, hi, doing like, hi. And then she's like, Sonny boy. I'm like, what? She goes, I'm like, what? She goes, you took us. Jewish ass. I forgot to pull the needle out. I was walking down the hallway like a dotted bull with a needle sticking out of my ass. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. Pull the needle out of my ass, right? And I end up collapsing on the floor. That'd take me home. Which of those three stories?
God. So here's my thought process.
Okay, let's go.
The one you just told is so outrageous that it has to be true.
Okay.
Okay, the third one has to be true. I think that because we went from two truths and a lie from me to you first, you were thinking about your lie first. So that was going to be your first one, your first story. So your first story with the FBI agent, parts of that is a lie.
Boom! Yeah!
I love it.
Man, yes!
I love it.
We did it, buddy.
There you go. Legend. That last story though, oh my God,
fucking A.
I could do this all day with you, man.
Dude, I literally the worst part was I was a hero. I saved my friend's life. So I was like, I was finally in good graces with my second wife, and then like I come back, crawling on the floor back from the bathroom. She's like, what happened? Ah, the stress was more than I could bear.
Amazing.
I think the biggest disaster out there right now is the infiltration of our educational institutions by these ultra-liberal voices, these libtard voices.
So do I.
And I saw it with my own children. They go into college, and they get virtually brainwashed into thinking the world exists of safe spaces and snowflakes and these ultra... And listen, dude, I grew up in the most liberal house. I'm liberal. Views are all... I don't care. God, you marry everyone. I don't care anything about that.
Me too. Liberal parents, liberal views.
And it really bothers me about the Republicans. I think they got it so wrong.
They do.
They're on the wrong side of this whole thing.
How can you be for small government and then have the government dictate all these things in your personal life?
Exactly.
Right? You idiots. You got it completely wrong.
Can't you just wake up
exactly.
and fucking stop?
Exactly.
Bible Belt ain't voting for the Democrats. You still got them anyway.
You already have them. I know. I'm with you 100%. It's funny that you say that because I'm 100%.
Right? It's crazy. Yep. So because the Republic, they're on the wrong side.
Yeah, you're for small government only when it comes to money.
You know, but I watched the debates of the Democrats. It scared me.
Well, come on, man.
What the fuck?
Like I've never talked about this on my show, but I'm with you. I watched that debate and I went, and I'm not kidding you. Like, I'm a really liberal guy. I watched the debates and I told my wife, I go, I think our country is like over. I think it's gone. How is my son going to get wealthy? How is he going to prosper? Let me get this straight. By the way, I've had people on my show. I'm for figuring out a way to legalize people that are here, all kinds of stuff, right?
Like, me too.
I'm very much for it.
Me too.
I'm for amnesty. It's a horrible thing to say, right?
Let them go serve a few years in the military, right? Become fucking citizens.
We'll find a way, right? I've had people on my show that are very, I've featured stories of people who even came here illegally and have prospered. So I'm right there, man. But when you say, I want to make it not illegal to illegally enter a country and then offer you free health insurance. Like,
what is that?
What are we doing here, man? Like, what happened?
So I try to figure out a motive. So I'm saying, okay, what's the motive?
Votes. boats.
Obviously, right? So that's why my wife said, what do you think? I said, it's all about boats. It's boats. It's all about boats, right?
Right.
But I'm thinking, here's what I, kind of what I think, okay? I'm hoping at least they're all full of shit.
Right.
They don't really, none of them believe this shit. They're just saying it because they're playing to the left wing to win the primary and they'll rewrite their story. Because what I saw on that platform was some of the scariest shit I've ever seen.
I know.
Because I grew up in a very liberal house. I remember when, like, the Republicans and the Democrats, they were, like, kind of two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
One was a little bit higher taxes, one was a bit lower taxes.
Yes.
But they were basically, it wasn't like now. It's just like, they're like, let everyone the fuck in.
Yeah.
ICE is illegal. Because AOC, went, and here's the thing with her, all right? She actually says some smart...
I know.
Every once in a while,
I know.
She'll come out with a smart comment. Like
I know.
Shit out of her mouth.
Yeah,
it's like freaking insane.
Right, right,
you know?
Insane. The world's not going to end in 10
well,
years.
Or 12 years.
12 years, right. But I'm with you, too. Like, I just watched a video of Obama from about 5 years ago, and he was asked a question in the interview, which is, what do we do with these children when they at the border and they may get separated from their parents? And the president said, well, it's very simple. That wouldn't happen if you wouldn't bring them here illegally. Don't bring them here until it's legal. Now, he could get away with saying that. If Trump said that, right? And by the way, there's a whole bunch of stuff with our president that I'm not a fan of. Like, tons
my big problem, he says some stupid shit.
Right, like, and not everybody that comes across our border. I'm living in Southern California most of my life. Most, the vast, vast majority of people that have come to our country have come here to work, to contribute, to make a difference, are good families.
Agreed.
They're not criminals and rapists.
Agreed.
I hate when he goes down that road.
It's stupid.
I hate it. And it doesn't
but
need to be
said. But they
should
still come legally. They should be a way for them to come legally, not illegally.
Well, the big thing is that we have to know who's coming across the border because the modern day threat, terrorism wise, may be an airplane going into a building, but it's more likely someone taking a dirty bomb across our border. It's more like someone coming in and doing something really dangerous that they brought across the border. We need to know who these people are. Almost everybody agrees with that. But I do worry. The reason I think we're important is that my biggest concern is that people begin to think they can't win in this country. That they can't prosper, they can't start a business, they can't succeed, and they decide that it's just better to get everybody's paper graded with a C. Let's just do socialism. Mm. You study really hard and get an A, I don't and get a D, we'll all get a C. And I do feel like these people that are out there on social media, myself, you, other people that are saying, you can win, you can prosper, go for it in this society, compete and win, are some extent the last bastion of hope for entrepreneurs.
Right.
You can't simultaneously be an entrepreneur and be for socialism.
Right.
You just can't. You're either a capitalist or you're not. I'm not saying that capitalism shouldn't be regulated, there shouldn't be governors. The biggest thing I'd love to fix in our country, if I could find a way to do it, is not tax people and give that money to other people. Wages are so low in this country for working people. Like, they've been suppressed. We've got to come to a national agreement of some type of how to wage. Look, 40 years ago, a middle-class person could raise their family.
You're reading my mind, Bob. Okay. Keep going. Well, I'll tell you what I'll put in my head.
My dad is a middle-class guy, lower middle-class even. But you know what? He worked a job. My mother could stay home with our children. They could have a decent home. We had a good holiday. We'd go on a decent vacation. We had a decent life. Now, a working family, very difficult, almost impossible in California to own a home after taxes, after what it costs. So we got to find a way to raise wages. And this suppression of wages has caused people to go, screw it, just tax these rich people. I can't win because of this. You're discriminating against me. All of that's to some extent true, but it's magnified because people are like, this isn't fair, man. I work hard. I busted my ass. I'm not saying I should be a millionaire, but I ought to have something decent for my family. That's the part where I'm on the liberal side big time. I just don't like their answer.
Mm.
What were you going to say?
Well, two things. So what I was going to say was that when I asked you the question, I was thinking to myself, you said something about your fear for this country, right? I travel extensively around the world, right? And an interesting case would be something like Australia. Where compared to the U.S., they're relatively socialist, but they're a capitalist. They're a capitalist society, but if you actually have been there and spent time, a lot of things there lean much more heavily towards socialism in the sense that
healthcare,
minimum wage is much higher.
Yep.
Much higher.
Yep.
And that's the big, for instance, there, I think the minimum wage is over $20 an hour. Like, everyone makes more money there.
Yep.
Everyone also has their own self-directed super fund. They automatically,
and
I think it's 9% or something, goes into they self-direct. Their answer to Social Security, right? But the big thing that worries me is not so much the taxes, and I think the high taxes are bad, and I'll tell you why. I for a different reason, I think because they waste the fucking money.
Of course.
If they could, if in a pure world, if you could tax the money and then distribute it without it all being lost in the process of distributing it, it would be great.
Right.
But every bureaucracy cannibalizes the bulk of what they tax. That's you get right. it? And that's it's a historically, it's not even the, you know, it's not even the fault of the US. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's just that that's how humans are, right? Yep. It doesn't work when you try to tax because the, in theory, yes, right, but the bureaucracy eats it up, right? Same thing when people try to raise money by phone for charity. They, you know, they, all the fucking money's being taken by the people raising money.
So true.
Biggest scam ever, right?
Yeah.
So but here's my fear. Is not even so much that we lose our country with taxes or people lose hope, is that in Australia, what you have is something called the tall poppy syndrome.
Okay.
So what that is that while in the United States, at least for now, we respect the entrepreneur, we respect success. We want to, we look at that person and say, wow, if you drive a nice car because you worked really hard, people say, oh, wow, look at that beautiful car. He's, and people, in Australia, it's the opposite. So because of the socialist ideal there, it's frowned upon. They call it a tall pop. I mean, if you get too big, they'll fucking knock you down.
Yes.
They'll the government will come to figure out a way to take your money back. And I think that's the big fear I have is that almost like that there comes like a shift in perspective. Because the one thing the United States has, which I have not seen anywhere else in the world, is this. Number one, this incredible respect for the entrepreneur and almost, you know, looking at them as almost like the rock star of the 21st century, right?
Yeah.
The second thing is the acceptance of failure and bankruptcy. In other countries, the stigma of failure and bankruptcy is so severe that it will debilitate people for many, many years. You take your passport away, you can't leave the country. I mean, it's really, really bad. Well, here, people will fail, go bankrupt, and they come back.
Come back.
Accepted, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't want to burn everybody, but the point is, within reason here, the sort of the reinvention, of that, that's an American thing that I've never really seen anywhere to this level. And my worry is that all this rhetoric going on right now, it's like almost like that, if that when that belief system gets stifled, we have a freaking problem.
Well, I only thing I disagree with you on is I think we're trending there now. I mean, I do. I think there's a huge demonization of success. And it's funny, we don't do it with athletes anymore. LeBron James can go make hundreds of millions of dollars. For some reason, it's okay. We haven't connected our ticket prices are higher because he's making that money. But but when it comes to business, don't you meet people? I do all the time. They're like, wow, you're really a nice man. You're humble. It surprises them that maybe a person with some financial success is actually a good human. And I think there's been this trend for a while where I think people think successful people have got it through ill-gotten means. But I can tell you, in my experience, the wealthy people that I know, not the ones who inherited it necessarily, but that have made it. And by the way, can't you tell right when you meet a dude? I can tell right when I meet, did he inherit it or make it?
Right.
But the vast majority of people who keep money long-term are really good human beings. The vast majority that I've met that have kept it. Not short-term, but they're good people. They do typically good things. And I hate that I think that's beginning to become demonized.
How many young people, like you manage, like that's your, like this whole influence mark, that's your specialty, right? How many people a day come to you looking for like, you know, to help them, you know, make me famous, make me rich?
Not an hour goes by. I get it on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. There's carrier pigeons flying in. Doesn't matter. Any way they can get to me, email, they show up at the office, they text me. You have to have it.
Let's talk about that. Because I think this is really, it's something that it's not my specialty, the whole, I'm not the influencer market, right? I got famous the old fashioned way, right?
Yeah.
Okay. By getting in trouble and redeeming myself, right? At least. Anyway, no, but what, tell me, like, if you have like five step program for any person out there who's like in their early 20s, late teens.
Easy.
Tell me the five steps to gain to the point where someone like you would say, I want this guy in my life. I want to help this guy.
First things first is setting up shop. Meaning, make an Instagram, a Facebook, a Twitter, a LinkedIn, a YouTube, a Pinterest. You make all the platforms free, 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 and free.
So many zero people, investment to do that.
Right. So many people want me to make them famous. They don't even have other platforms. They just have one. But what if one goes away? I can't make you just famous on one. I need you on everything.
Got it.
Next thing. What's your story? You got to have the same bio photo. You got to have your profile done right. You got to make you look good so that if I go get you famous, I get eyeballs on you. People want to react.
Right.
Okay.
Stop. 1 second. So with that step though, right? How would you, so that information's out there.
Yes.
I bet if I Google you and say how to, you probably have a video you're teaching that for free. How to do exactly how the video, every frame of the video should look, how long.
Right.
So is that information's out there, right?
Yes.
So where would you find that?
On YouTube.
Just go to Google it on YouTube.
Yeah. Or my Instagram. I have all the videos. I try to do as many. I've done thousands and thousands of videos on there, so it's on there.
Point being, it's not a secret how to do that, right? So anyone could do this, plus no money.
Correct.
Step three.
Create content. So the content, people have to actually, once they come to you, once they find you, once they see you, now you can, Jordan Belfort can now shout out somebody, but if they go there and there's nothing there, they leave. They're not going to follow you, right? You have to now have content for them to go look. So how do you create content? You take a camera that's on your phone. Don't need a fancy videographer.
Right.
If you can, great. Great. You don't need it. An iPhone or an Android shoots really, really impressively.
Right.
You go out there and you make content in your niche. The words are, the niches are in the riches.
Guys, so give me an example of some niches, like the common niches for people, like young people.
The highest paid influencers in the world are beauty influencers.
Got it.
And it's not close.
So all you ugly bastards, I'm sorry, it ain't for you. Now keep going.
There's plenty of guys that do makeup to make themselves look like girls. I can make an ugly guy, girl, anything, make it look magically amazing, and those people make way more money.
So, is it beautiful? It's for anybody. Girls or guys, doesn't matter.
No, there's male
health and fitness, or no different.
The male makeup influencers destroy revenue and eyeballs and engagement of the females.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
I'm talking about destroy.
Wait, stop. Explain this to me.
Okay. There's a kid right now. There's two of them in particular. This kid was from Hawaii and didn't have a bank account. I tried to pay him $30,000 for posting.
What's his name?
I don't want to get to him.
Okay, let's go.
This kid.
They'll find out. I know they will, right?
This kid now has 12 million followers and turns down $150,000 per post. He didn't have a bank account.
How long ago?
2.5 years ago. Okay.
All right. Tell me how this happened. I want to give us
the
secret.
He made videos of him going crazy, talking about makeup, and he would just be very flamboyant and very.
Is he gay or is he transsexual? Gay. Okay. Right.
There's another one that named Nikita Dragon. Was a boy, turned into a girl. In our office, we watched her do six figures, hundreds of thousands of dollars in revenue in 11 minutes. Okay.
Doing what?
This is a male turned female that does makeup and teaches people about makeup. Some of the most famous
teachers are the guys or girls?
Girls.
Okay. I guess saying that if there's I some can guys look beautiful, that can then learn. You yeah. can certainly look.
Right. Some guys can learn from her too, obviously.
Right.
Some of the most amazing branding you've ever seen and some of the most amazing videos you've ever seen. One of our videographers, Live Rich Media, shot a video for her when that whole thing with Victoria's Secret happened. The director of marketing of Victoria's Secret said,
right.
I'll never allow transsexuals in the Victoria's Secret show. Live Rich Media and Nikita Dragon shot a video the next day that got more video views than the entire Victoria's Secret did on TV in one day.
It's just a new world. If you understand this world, right? It's just crazy.
So the idea is, it doesn't matter if you're a boy, girl, straight, gay, smart, dumb, fat. None of it matters anymore.
It's about a niche.
Yes.
And something that's probably congruent that you actually really, not manufactured, but
exactly.
Really
if you like passion. If you like to fix cars, do that. If you like to clean guns, do that.
Open, make videos about that. I think there's a five-year-old kid who opens up toys and makes like 5
million, 20 million, whatever. It's insanity.
Right?
It's insanity. But the concept is, it's the content. Everything I just said leads back to the content. You said he fixes toys or he reviews toys. It's the content.
He films himself doing it and explains it. And it's not even about the quality of the foot, right? Right? It's,
absolutely not. You don't need highly edited footage. There's plenty of people out there that they actually don't want to see highly edited footage because they feel like you're selling them.
Right.
We see 3,500 logos per day on average. We're getting pitched all day long. I'm sitting here. I see all different brands as we're sitting here. Right?
These people should pay me. I drink
for sure.
I just, I can't steal Coke anymore. It's the only thing I have left. You know what I'm saying? What am I going to do? You know? I'm sober for too long.
By the way, the first 20 seconds we were sitting down, I was going to actually twist this because
I thought about it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But I'm just lazy. I was saying I shouldn't give them free advertising. Anyway, but this is amazing. So we did beauty, right?
Yeah. Food, cars.
Food. Give me an example of food.
I mean, the chefs and people creating food content, they don't have to be chefs. There's people's moms that are just stay at home moms that are getting $10,000, $20,000 per video, just making cooking videos.
My daughter's boyfriend, okay, perfect example, right? I should tell him this, he's gonna watch this, right? He made the perfect chocolate chip cookie. Yeah. He's like crazy. He spent like a year going through like every possible recipe and he's made the perfect cookie. Like, so that sort of thing could actually be a business.
That should be placed on Pinterest, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, etc. And then if it's converting, meaning people are naturally wanting to do it, then it's number four, you spend money. Okay, not a lot of money.
I explain that part now.
Okay, so let's say
you're on the platforms.
Yes.
You have some traction, people liking your stuff, right?
Sometimes you might be on six platforms and only one of them it takes off.
Okay.
And takes off might only be 10,000 or 30,000 views for you, but that's a big deal. Maybe you only have 6,000 followers. When something starts to take off and you have engagement, spend some money on it. I call it digging for oil.
How much money? Like for an average person?
$50, $200, $200.
Okay, so anyone could do that.
Literally anybody.
And how would you spend it?
All it is increasing the reach.
Boosting a post, right?
That's it. It just says right there, it says boost post. Click on that, put in your credit card, and say I'm willing to pay $50, $100, $500, $200, whatever you can afford, and increase that reach. You already know that people like it.
Targeting any audience, you just let them target it for you.
If you can target a niche, fantastic. If you're making it, if it's just a viral video, let it go.
Okay.
It's more expensive to target the niche followers. If you are in a niche, do that. If you do fitness or food or beauty, etc., do that. If not, just paying for that extra reach is invaluable. Why?
And Facebook will use their algorithm to reach the people. Like, right? So they'll do it for you.
They're magical.
Right, yeah, they are rare.
They're magical.
It works well.
But what you're doing is what most people do the mistake of is they make that beauty video or they make that fitness video or they make that car repair video and then they start spending money right away or they wonder why it's not working. Let the people tell you first.
Dude, you know what? You know, it's so crazy. You're going to appreciate this. Steve Madden, how Steve Madden really took off is that he'd go make all these shoes and put them into these little stores in Greenwich Village and South Beach and see which one sold, get the early read, and then go all in on that.
Absolutely.
So you have 20 shoes,
right?
But you just make a couple of them, right? Then you find one takes off, and then he get that, and then he had it made in Mexico. So you get a 4-week turnaround time versus going from China, which would take 3 months. Right. And you go to Macy's, say, hey, I have this shoe, I know it sells, and he beat everyone to the punch. He destroyed Don West like that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Same thing. So it's basically the same strategy you're doing here online.
Right. So here's number 5, collaboration. So the only way for people to see you is for people to show you, right?
Right.
So the way for you to get seen is if your friends are fitness influencers also, and you go to work out on Sundays, you pull out your phones and you be strategic about it and actually start making content with them. If that friend has 8,000 followers, that one has 20, and then one of them has 80, okay? You're not doing it to use them per se. They want to create content with you also.
I get it, right. It's mutual, it's like symbiotic.
Absolutely. When you guys are creating content, the people that are following them, the 8,000, the 20,000, and the 80,000, they've already proven to you that they like fitness influencers.
Got it.
If there's 4 real estate agents and you guys go look at a house, and the 2 girls and the 2 guys pull out their phones and they're filming content, they might only have 26,000 followers, but those 26,000 followers, I've already told you, they like real estate agents.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Sure, totally, I get it. It's like, you're not competing with them, it's additive.
Absolutely.
It's people scared, I don't want to, they'll steal my followers. Not even, it's the exact opposite.
So then, when you're at these situations, you create extra content. The problem is, 4 girls, 4 models go to dinner, or 4 male models go to dinner, and they take a photo together and that's it. No. That's the time you do videos together, you do individual photos together, you do 2 together.
Give me some
examples,
because that gets specific. Give me an example. I know you got this down to just slides. Like, how would you, okay, let's say 4 people are out of the same, how would you, like, there's certain shots, right? You would want.
I'll use my wife as an example. So she's built up 600,000 plus followers now. It's at Casey Loves Fitness. And she does, like, her video today is with another fitness influencer. Tomorrow she'll post a picture of herself, the next picture of herself, and another fitness influencer. What happens is, as she's filming fitness video content with Dobling or Kevin Ostage and our different videographers, they'll make these videos together with Anna Shree. She has 12 million followers. Make it with this girl who has 1 million followers, 5 million followers. As they're making videos together, you make it about the other person. That's the difference. Most people make it about themselves.
You gave me this advice too. You said with the podcast, make sure, like, when I advertise, it's always about the other person.
Correct.
It's tough for me not to talk, but you got a great story, so this is awesome.
so what happens is, you know, when you're out with your friends and you guys take a picture together and they always post the one that's just perfect about them?
Yes.
You're never going to repost it, right? Because you're like, wait a minute, why does my face look weird? Or why does my hair look like that? Or why am I making some weird, you know?
I get it. Right.
If you make the content about them, you win.
They'll post, because then they'll repost it. Of course, I get it.
And then all their fans is who you're trying to go after. You don't have to impress these people. They're already drinking the Kool-Aid. Your followers are already drinking the Kool-Aid. They've already made a decision. They clicked the follow button. They're yours. If you make it about them, oh man, you can grow your following so fast.
For young entrepreneurs, right? What's the best, like, not like what industry reaches, just what's the advice that you would give, like, you know, to a young guy, 20, 25 years old, right, wants to go out, get rich, build a great life. What advice, just overall advice would you give them?
It's very easy for me. It's shadowing. Go shadow somebody. Go shadow somebody that's been very good.
Proximity is power, right?
Not just proximity. Proximity is, hey, Jordan, can I take you out to lunch and spend time with you? That could be proximity. I'm talking about
sticking by,
hey, and tapping. Hey, can I work for Jordan? Be your right-hand guy. be a the movie American Gangster. You see Frank Lucas sees his boss, shadows him for 10 years. Then he becomes, you see this in business. You see this in sports. You see this, Steve Kerr is shadowing Phil Jackson. Then he shadows Popovich. Now he's the best coach in the NBA outside of Popovich. There's an element of shadowing. So you got to find somebody locally where you say, look, I want to go work for this guy. And I'm going to spend 3 years with this guy and learn from him.
So the idea is that, like, let's say, you know, you're a born entrepreneur, right? You know it's in your blood.
Yeah.
But as part of that, like, there's a certain period of sacrifice to really, if you find the right mentor, someone that can, like, you can really, you know, kind of really tap into, right, and really learn from and grow with. There's nothing wrong with spending a certain amount of time there and really
becoming, you know,
those grooming years, right? I think a lot of people skip over that. They don't want to sit there and kind of be subservient to someone else. They even think of something, if you're in, like, you know, there's an entrepreneurial mindset to go work for someone else, but they're not mutually exclusive. In other words, it's okay to do it if there's an end game in mind, right? That you're not looking to be a lifelong servitor.
Yeah.
But to tap into whatever you need, but then eventually when the time is right and you know what you need to know, you have the connections, the respect, you go out on your own. Is that
Absolutely. I'm all about, if you shadow the right person, and then for me, get to a point where you can have a power position with this person. Get to a point where you can get, I'm talking to the person that's absolutely ambitious driven. Sure. I'm not talking to the guy that's,
I get it,
wants to do a role playing type of position. I'm talking somebody that says, I want to go be somebody and I want to go make tens, if not hundreds, chase the big dollars, but I want to be able to do it with somebody. You find, like, a lot of times somebody goes and works for a guy who's doing very well. He's known in the community, say the whoever of different cities. Every city has somebody that everybody wants to work for. You go work for that guy. Then it comes to a point where you're like, I'm going to go do my own thing. It may not make sense for you to go do your own thing. There's a lot of people right now being billionaires, being intrapreneurs, not entrepreneurs.
In certain industries, by the, like, financial survey, you could tap into infrastructure. It's easier.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
Absolutely. Even Ballmer, look what Ballmer's worth, you know, $30, $40 billion. Right. He never started anything. He worked with Gates. So positioning is critical. Knowing where your strengths are. You know, this whole idea about I can be that guy. You can't be everybody. You got to know it very early. You cannot be everybody. There are certain people you and I cannot be like. There are certain personality traits.
No doubt about it.
So the sooner you understand.
Identifying your own strengths and accepting it.
Yes.
And, right, yeah.
So style, like, let's just say if I relate to your style, I'm like, you know what? I'm like his style. Then I got to work for a guy like you. Say a different style of selling. You go look at a guy's style selling that's very proper, right, you know, very, sure. You got to go to that guy. Somebody that fits your style that's killing it, then go shadow that person. And a few years later, you can make some decisions on where you want to go.
I think that, you know, one of the things is important to point out with that is that when you're modeling someone, you don't have to necessarily take every aspect of them. You can extract
the
best, right? Because I made that mistake. Because you're right, I've done that, and I did that, and I actually had some guys, some amazing traits, but he had some bad ones too, and I didn't realize, I was young and naive, and I took sort of the whole organism. You can actually have one, two, three people, and you had five entities, and you sort of pulled the best from each one, started your company, pivoted a couple of times, boom, took off. So I think the key is that when you do what you said, because I think it's a great thing to do, but you don't have to always take everything from someone. You could take only the best traits and the ones that fit you and sort of leave, because no one's perfect. Everyone's got their flaws and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, one of the best advices I got many, many years ago was, sons and fathers or daughters and mothers go through three phases. First, they idolize, then they demonize, then they humanize. So idolize, demonize, humanize. Oh, my gosh, my dad's my hero. Dad, you're an asshole. You know nothing. You don't even understand what I'm going through. Oh my gosh, my dad's not perfect. He's a human being just like me. So yeah, anybody you work with, you're going to go through it. And the goal is to eventually get to the humanized phase because no one is going to be perfect.
Guys, have a great day. And we'll talk again soon in the Wolf's Den. Share this with your friends.